Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, welcome everyone to a Baseball America Podcast, a late Monday edition. It's freaking dark outside already at 5:25. It's very frustrating on the East Coast, JJ, as far south as we are.
Well, I think this is the week that sunset right now and where we are is 5:05, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah, if you're listening to this further up the East Coast, you're like, 5:05? Man, it'd be great to have 5:05.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, Either way, I'm John, he's JJ. It's a late day podcast. We're a little bit delayed in recording the podcast today because of magazine stuff going on, and we do still have this wonderful print product that you can subscribe to at Baseball America, and also Rule 5 Fever. Rule 5 Fever's kind of taking us over a little bit.
We will do... I was about to say we will do a Rule 5 podcast, and that's so funny as in to defy expectation. No, we will do Rule 5 podcasts, by... I mean, hey, if I got a good Wi-Fi, maybe I'll just do like a 24-hour Rule 5 marathon podcast, or live streaming or whatever from the winter meetings,
It is kind of amazing that the Rule 5 draft, in some ways, I do love how people who are our readers get so into it and that we get so into it. And another way, it's amazing how at the end of the winter meetings, it is such an afterthought process. You get in that room, Roy Krasick, MLB, they are organized up there. Roy gets up there. Matt, Eddie, and I love doing a couple of Roy Krasick impersonations. Chicago White Sox. He says it very distinctively. New York Mets. Very distinctively says these things. But it just like boom, 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 and it's over.
And it really
is. It's over too soon.
And it, for me, it's very much. It's like, it's over. And then like you turn around and everyone... Pretty much everyone at the winter meetings has gathered in this giant...
It's a big ballroom.
This ballroom.
And one wall of the ballroom usually has, like, everyone's roller bags.
Yes. But literally, they finish the final pick of the double-A phase, which usually goes, like, five players deep. They finish the double-A phase. You run around, and literally at that point, it is for us, it is a team effort of, you're going to get these guys, I'm going to get these guys.
Yeah,
because,
it was good talk. Yep.
Because you literally have like a 10-minute window to get pro scouting directors, GMs, assistant GMs to talk Rule 5. And then you turn around and it's like there's like 12 people left there.
That's it. It empties out fast. It de-escalates quickly.
Yes. I mean, it just disappears.
It really does.
And then it's like the next 2 hours of just right.
So
and sometimes right in a taxi or an Uber on the way to the airport because you got to catch your own flight.
It is a very fun process. We enjoy bringing it to you. We enjoyed writing JJ definitely spearheaded it Friday afternoon. Here's the 40-man roster edition list. That was a lot of fun. It seems like people like that file. So keep it tuned here, as they used to say, and we will continue our Rule 5 coverage. Today we're continuing our American League Central Top 10 series with a podcast, and JJ's been doing the Royals top 30s since it feels like time in memoriam, back since Zach Greinke was their number one prospect, right?
No, that was Will Kimmy back then. So,
it was Will Kimmy and Matt Myers, right?
I took over the year that Hosmer was...
2008?
Hosmer, I think it was Hot... Like, basically, all those guys were just... the wave had started to be assembled.
Hosmer and Moose Tacos...
Oscar Moustakas, then the next year Will Myers, joined the party. I want to say like the first year I did it, I never had to write the truly fallow years.
This is Matt Myers after the 2006 season, ten years ago, writing Alex Gordon 1, Luke Hochhaver 2, Billy Butler 3, but then Lubansky, Lumsden Meyer, Brian Bannister, Justin Huba, Billy Buckner, and Brent Fisher. Those were fallow, difficult times to be a Royals fan.
And the funny thing is that 1-2-3 there.
That's better
than what? Three guys who are still 10 years later who are all active. I'm not saying that Luke Hochhaver's career may not have been a little bit disappointing for 1-1, but he has had his moments. He has a ring.
What was the band that sang the song Alive and Kicking? And they also did the other song. It's Simple Minds.
Yeah.
Simple Minds, I always think. Kicking. Exactly. So those guys are still alive and kicking. The Royals farm system now, JJ, I mean, I guess it's understandable they've but taken it's a step back. Again. But it is. It is. I mean, like, you had a hard time deciding on number one. And they're just really, when you have, there's sometimes where it's hard to pick number one, like, oh man, Benintendi or Moncada, where it's like two great tastes and you could go either one. You can go chocolate or peanut butter there. This one just, you didn't really have an obvious number one, and you really didn't have a clear number one, and it's because really none of these guys who were in contention to be the number one prospect should have been the number one prospect.
I mean, if you want, here are your candidates, and I actually did have a scout jokingly say to me, no, I like Ryan O'Hearn. He should be your one. So that's, you know.
Really, Ryan O'Hearn?
Yeah. Okay. If you believe in the bat, you know, I mean, he was number eight, so I didn't go that way. But your three candidates, really, Eric Skoglund's number four. I like Eric Skoglund. Eric Skoglund being number four, Eric Skoglund, the more I talked to people, the more he kept moving up.
Yeah.
But
pitchability, but, tall, left-hander.
But, and the stuff, though.
And the stuff's a little bit better than just pitchability.
And the thing about it is really is a lot better than it was when he was in college. When he was in college, he didn't throw as hard as he did now. But he's the four.
The thing I like about Eric Skoglund also is very durable. Mm-hmm. 156 innings this year. He's ready to help the major league club sooner than later, you would imagine.
So, but the three guys, Josh Staumont, Matt Strom, Hunter Dozier. And let's just lay out, I'll do a very quick shorthand version of.
Counselor, you have the floor.
The case for Staumont, number one. He throws 100. He throws 102 if you need it.
He probably throws 100 as easily as any starter in professional baseball throws 100.
This is not Noah Syndergaard right now.
Right.
This is not he goes out and you just see 100 consistently as a starter. But you see upper 90s consistently as a starter. He's made significant strides. And I say that, this is a guy who led the minors in walks this year. And let me check the scouting.
Second in strikeouts, I believe.
And second in strikeout. They weren't putting the ball in play much. It was, but he has always been wild.
Somehow threw 123 innings. I mean, like.
And then went to the AFL.
The Royals let him eat.
But he made significant strides with his control as the season went along. He has excellent stuff, obviously. And whereas when they drafted him, it was like, well, this guy's a. He's going to be a reliever. He's not going to be able. There's no way he's going to be able to start. You get guys now. It's like, you know what? There's not. I mean, this is 1 year later. His first full season, he was in Double-A. He was the ace of their playoff team, and he shoved down the stretch with the playoffs on the line and then in the playoffs. That's a pretty good first year, even with all the wildness, and he was wild.
That's the amazing part, is it was his first full year in pro ball, and
And this is not a guy who came from the SEC. This is a guy who came from Azusa Pacific.
Yeah, or the Pac-12. I mean, like, he really finished really strong in Double-A after a not good first half of the season.
A terrible first half in
Wilmington. But going to Double-A, something clicked for this guy. Was it something that clicked, JJ, or did he just perform a little
delivery better? One of the things they did, Steve Luber is their Double-A pitching coach.
And he's really not the only guy,
but he's really good. He's been with them for a long time. And one of the things they did was they added, brought his hands above his head. And it just helped him with the timing, helped him stay back, you know, and
helped him be on time at foot strike.
Yeah, exactly.
Homage to Clint. Yeah, gotta get
the body's not seductive, Clint, you know. But
and that's the thing. It just seems like he's just, I don't know, blessed. Lucky, however you want to say it, he just has a special arm, JJ. Because it's not, it's not like he's super tall or strong. I mean, he's got a fast arm, but it's not like it's a lightning fast arm, is it?
It's just it just all adds up very nicely for him, and so that's the case for him. The goods are, I mean, there's no one in the organization with better stuff. The downside is he led the minors in walks this year, and that was an improvement because. He walked everyone in college.
And you gave him a 45 for control because it got better. He probably could have gone four.
Oh, yeah.
He probably could have gone three if he really wanted to.
If you did, if you're not the number one.
Yes.
This is future grade. If I don't believe that he could end up with a 45 control,
great
he's not
point.
Number one.
That's a great point.
Matt Strom. Case for Matt Strom. Matt Strom is a lefty with legit stuff, fastball that generates swings and misses.
Matt Strom basically took the place of Brandon Finnegan in a lot of ways in this organization. The guy who could have been in their big league bullpen as a left-hander, but they could develop as a starter. They did both with Matt Strom in 2016. Right. He was quite good out of the bullpen, too good.
He was a solid starter for them at AA. Then they needed bullpen help. They brought him up. And 30 Ks in 22 innings with 13 hits allowed, is really good.
It is.
And he has a legitimate swing and miss fastball. He's got three pitches. There's nothing about him that says he can't start.
Except for the fact that he has relieved very well in the major leagues, and they've been like, hey, wait a minute.
But the thing with that, though, is that they can now say, look at Danny Duffy. Because we did the same thing with Danny Duffy, and then we transitioned him to the rotation. I do think if you said, where is Matt Strom in 2017, I think it is probably he starts the year in the Royals bullpen, because this is the Who saying that this is our last tour, and and we really mean it this time. This is where the Royals are at. This is the Royals. They're a Tribe Called Quest when they say this is our last album, and you know it is because there's no more Fife, unfortunately. Right. This is the 2017 season is it. There is no financial way that you can keep Hosmer and Moustakas and Kane.
Who actually did do a tour that was the last tour, then never toured again? Who actually did that? It's almost like, I don't know. Whoever did that.
But
everyone always comes back for one more.
You know, but
I guess REM did it. Maybe they'll come
back. Yeah, no, but REM right now, they legitimately said, like, no, this is it. We're done. And so far, they've been done.
The rest of them are basically saying, Michael Stipe is too weird, even for us now.
But so I do think that he will be in their pen for that reason, but that does not preclude him from starting. So that's the case. The good for him is legit stuff, lefty, middle rotation starter at the ideal role.
I don't think he quite has Danny Duffy upside, does
no,
he?
No, no, no.
Okay.
No, Danny Duffy was Danny Duffy was a top 25, top 50 Duffy. Prospect.
Lompoc, baby.
Strom has, I give Strom credit, he was not a prospect, really.
Yeah, nice pick by Matt Price, area scout out of that, part of that Wake Forest Mafia. Got a lot of those guys who worked down at the Yankees organization. We used to have one here in the office, and Ryan Johnson, another all-time BA fave. A lot of those guys out there in pro ball, and Matt Price is one of them, was the area scout on Matt Strom. So a mid-row, like I said, a number three starter.
Maybe a lefty reliever.
Yeah.
And you know what? If he's going to be a lefty reliever, as good as that may be, you don't want that to be number one.
And then you have Hunter Dozier, who
Monster
I guess really they think, you know, when you look at pedigree, should be the number one prospect. He was a first-round pick 3 years ago. It was a little bit of like a money deal.
They got Shamania, who was Shamania is the guy they spent the most money on.
Right.
But he still got legit money. He was a back-of-the-first-round type talent, not a top-10 talent. But that's still a first-round talent.
But boy, Hunter Dozier, at this time last year, wasn't sniffing the top 10, even in a bad system, was
he? I think he was number 30 on last year's list. And it was like, ooh. I'm not giving, you know...
He didn't totally give up.
I was going to say, Bubba Starling's going,
huh. He went from 7 to 5 to 30.
This is the Bubba Starling, right? It goes up and down like that.
That's the guy who should be in the top of this list and isn't.
But
because he doesn't deserve to be.
But so here's the case for Hunter Dozier. Hunter Dozier slugged .642 this year in AA, slugged .506 in AAA, hit for average, right around .297, .298 between the two. Made it up to Kansas City at the end of the season for a late season call-up. Had a great year.
He really did. He struck out a lot, but he still had a great year. Struck out less than he had the year before.
Struck out a lot, but he got to power. 23 homers, you know, this year, which that's what you want.
Yeah.
And drew walks, you know, got on base, slugged, did everything. If this season was a natural progression just from 2013, first half of 2014, Hunter Dozier, you would say, yep, this guy's number one prospect. But you can't completely forget about the second half of 2014.
Anything over A ball had vexed Hunter Dozier until this year. Anything.
And now he made some adjustments. He improved. There's all, you know, the body, you know, there's debates about whether the body's even better, but the swing is definitely better. A little less power focus, which means he got to power, because that's the paradox that is the world of baseball.
Right.
But
he had 16 home runs and more than 700 at-bats at AA coming into this year. And then 8 in his first 95 at-bats to start the year.
And the reason I say, and this was a better year, but if we were at this time last year, and I was sucked in by this, even though I've kind of been skeptical, but Bubba Starling last year at this time looked like he'd really made some strides. You never were going to say Bubba Starling 60 hitter, but if Bubba Starling could end up being a 40 hitter,
right?
Everything else plays. Bubba Starling's a center fielder who's an exceptional defender, who can run, who can throw, who can hit for power, and if he hits 240, 250, great.
You were basically thinking, I mean, the comp we kept making was maybe he could be Drew Stubbs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he could be that kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe not even quite Drew Stubbs. He didn't run like Drew Stubbs, but maybe he could be that kind of guy.
And then this year, what was is that as good as last year, improvements seemed to happen, it all fell away this year. I'm not saying it's going to happen for Hunter Dozier. The other thing that's concerned with Hunter Dozier, again, when you're talking about a guy for number one, is Hunter Dozier is probably not going to play third base for the Kansas City Royals. For 2017, they have Mike Moustakas, and then they have Chesler Cuthbert, who was the fill-in when Mike Moustakas got hurt last year.
And perfectly solid player.
Perfectly solid player, not spectacular
by any
stretch.
Solid rookie season.
But Chesler Cuthbert is a better defender at third base than Hunter Dozier. So that's why Hunter Dozier started learning to play right field.
Right.
Well, he could be okay out there, but especially with the Royals, Hunter Dozier is not exactly what the Royals normally look for in a right fielder. Like, if you look at the guys who've played right field for the Royals, Alex Rios at this point is okay in his career, was not as rangy, but he still was a former, he's more of that right field profile. Paulo Orlando, very much. Gerard Dyson's played right field.
Low Kane. They play Low Kane in right field, they play Dyson in center.
All of those guys are, at the minimum, except for Rios, they're plus defenders.
I mean, you really go back, I mean, even to, like, you know, Al Cowens. Or you go back to, like, yeah, the late 80s. I mean, like, you know, where they had, like, wasn't Daryl Motley the right fielder on the 85 team?
It's a big outfield. It's a very big outfield. Yeah. And so
they want athleticism on the corners.
Again, and not that Dozier couldn't be a 45, maybe a 50 defender in right, but his arm doesn't play all that well out there so far yet. He's got to make adjustments to that. There are some obstacles for him. Even though as good a year as he had, he's probably headed back to AAA to start the season. And by the way, and I think he's probably, you know, Jorge Bonifacio's 9 on this list, and Jorge Bonifacio's a left fielder, right fielder as well, with a better arm.
Right.
I think Dozier's got a better bat, but there is, even take Paulo Orlando and those guys out of it, there still is his competition for that. So, again, like, those are your three guys. They all have pluses. They all have minuses.
Right.
And if you look at this, the other way you could put it is I could see three of these guys cracking the 100, and by cracking, I mean...
Toward the back.
I could see zero of these guys on the top 100.
I think I'll probably see at least one of them. I mean, Josh Stalmont's really interesting. I don't know that I love him. I definitely wouldn't want him to be the number one prospect in my organization, but he's pretty interesting for the top 100. Because, again, he does have stuff that very few other pitchers have in the minor leagues. I mean, you start with that 70 fastball and 60 breaking ball. There's a lot there for Josh Stalmont, too. There's a lot to like. JJ, the other thing I can't get past with the Royals, and I like the Royals organization and front office. I like how bold they are. But they have one of the big reasons their farm system is not as good right now is they have missed on some first-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just go, since Hosmer, Aaron Crow didn't work out. They didn't even sign him, right?
No, they did. They did.
Oh, they signed him. He was a
Kansas City Royals All-Star.
That was, wow. Christian Colon, 4th overall, the whiff.
That's a whiff.
I mean, I know he had his moment. Bubba Starling, Kyle Zimmer, who's still on this list.
Kyle Zimmer, number 10 here.
Foster Griffin. I skipped over Hunter Dozier. Foster Griffin, and then... What about that? So let's talk about their high school pitchers they've drafted of late. Foster Griffin, Nolan Watson, Ash Russell, JJ, all three of these guys didn't just not make your top 10. Those are three of the worst years by pitchers in the minor leagues.
No, Ash Russell statistically was not because he had one inning.
Okay. But Nolan Watson and Foster Griffin, those are, I mean, like, look away. It's like pipe night over there. It's hideous.
Yes. And
what's going on there?
I mean,
I'm putting you on the spot, I know. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
But Nolan Watson had a 7.57 ERA, and people love Nolan Watson.
Yeah, now I want to make sure, I'm pausing for a second here just to make sure that I get it right. So
Nolan Watson was less than Randy Watson this year. Sex with Chocolate.
I always get Nolan and Foster confused as far as Nolan. Okay, Foster's the one.
Foster's a left-hander.
Foster's a lefty who, I mean, I want to do this, but I still, because I have done this before because they were drafted so recently, so close together. Really, with Foster Griffin, what's happened is that he was drafted with the idea that this was a pitchability guy with solid stuff. All that has to happen is if he, you know, you project him to gain a tick, mm-hmm. and if he gains a tick, then you're really talking about a mid-rotation starter.
Yeah, he spun a breaking ball. We saw him as good as you can see him here. High school teammates with Virginia's Adam Haseley at the NHSI mm-hmm. in 2014.
Exactly.
And really competed, spun a breaking ball. I saw him at Under Armour the year before. I like Foster Griffin.
But when you saw him, and when we saw him at the time, if I remember right, it was 89-91.
Yeah, it was like 87-91 is what I was about to say.
87-91.
But he really, the secondary stuff, he knew how to use it. He was a good pitcher.
Good pitcher at 87-91, and the idea was you draft this guy. He's got one more. All it needs is one more tick. If 87-91 becomes 89-93, you know, like 2 miles an hour, you know, basically, with that kind of stuff, that kind of feel, then you really got something. And the reality of it is that, and this happens, when you draft a high school guy, there is no guarantee he's getting more velocity. In his case, he has, at best, maintained that velocity. And the reality of it is he just doesn't have, he does not have a pitch.
He's going out there with 40, 45 stuff every night.
He's going out 40, 45 stuff every night. And I don't care how good you compete. I don't care if you locate. That's tough to do.
I mean, just the high school pitching they've drafted lately, you know, like Colin Rogers, the left-hander out of Louisiana, got off to a nice start to his pro career. He has beep, beep, beep. He has backed up. And then Watson and Ash Russell, the high school pitchers in the 20 are volatile phylum. There's mm-hmm. no question. Mm-hmm. But in 2015, I remember people were very excited about Mike Nikorak, Nolan Watson, and Ash Russell. And all three of those guys are really off to poor starts in their pro career. And obviously, you know, they're not all Royals. Mike Nikorak with the Rockies.
But Griffin, I do think Griffin did not miss. I know this is going to, I mean, always probably because we haven't talked about it, my post top 10 yet too much. Griffin didn't miss the top 10 by all that much.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You can find scouts who saw him this year and liked him.
That's interesting.
I know that seems fascinating. His problem is, and I don't want to get John Manuel on a John Manuelian rant.
Is this going to be Bill Fisher related?
But his problem from scouts I talked to outside of the organization is that he has a good slider, a terrible curveball, and a terrible changeup. And he doesn't throw the slider very often.
This is like podcasts from 2010.
And so when he throws that curveball and changeup, it really gets beat up. And he said, but the thing about it is that if you see him, fastball's firm, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're basically throwing fastball and fastball count.
We're talking about Griffin or we're talking about Watson?
Griffin,
okay.
No, the right-hander.
Watson. We're talking about Nolan Watson.
Yeah,
all
Nolan
right.
Watson.
And Ash Russell just had some serious mechanical issues, it sounds like.
Got too big. The delivery
really
fell apart.
Lost some looseness.
Not have the arm speed he had before.
I mean, I saw him in the Appy League in 2015, and he was loose. He wasn't missing a lot of bats, but, you know, it was August or late. It was July. Mm-hmm. It was on the way to the Futures game. It was July. I'm just not going to judge a guy that's draft here. Getting used to pro ball. You're pitching in Bristol, Tennessee/Virginia.
But the arm work, now, the delivery was always long in the back. There was always...
But he was whippy and loose.
Right. This year, he was not loose.
That's a problem.
And
but you can get it back.
Because of that, though, like, the concerning thing is and he's going to make the 30, but the concerning thing is that he wasn't throwing an instructs. He's not back yet.
That's a problem.
And so, you expect him, like, you really hope that 2016 is just a lost season.
I mean, Christian Binford, Scott Blewett.
Scott Blewett's
number six. So there's some hope for Scott Blewett. But they have invested pretty heavily in high school pitching with very little return. I mean, like, Danny Duffy was drafted in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Montgomery was drafted in 2008.
But again, if you want to be the optimist about this, the thing about it is that it's both good and bad about high school pitching. One of the things that's bad about it is that, okay, Danny Duffy was drafted almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
Danny Duffy.
I'm a cunt.
Danny Duffy gave up baseball a long time ago now and then returned. That feels like forever ago.
Yes,
now.
It does.
Because, I mean, that was at the point. That
so
really,
basically, if you want a Royals pitching prospect who's a high school kid to come through, first he has to want to quit. Because that happened to Greinke and a Duffy. And those are the guys, those are the best high school pitchers they've drafted in the last 15 years. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
that's weird.
But the thing about it is if you said when did Danny Duffy become show signs that he's becoming everything they hoped he would be, it's 2016.
Right.
He's had his moments, but 2016 is when that happened. If you said when does Mike Montgomery become Mike Montgomery that they kind of hoped, it's 2016.
That's true as well.
And so what you're saying with this is
it takes a while.
It takes a while. In Mike Montgomery's case, it takes multiple organizations. He's on his fourth organization when it kind of like, he went Royals, Rays, Mariners, Cubs. And when the Cubs, it's like, you're the guy we're looking for.
Yes.
And Joe Maddon basically telling him in the bullpen, there's Chapman and you. They're the only guys I believe in.
I like you so much. I'm going to warm you up four times before I bring you in.
But I'm going to let you get the last out for your first save that you've ever had in your life.
Baseball is
weird. By the way, if you want to talk about kill the save, like you have to be a special guy to pitch the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Oh, how about the guy who got the last out in Game 7 of the World Series with the winning run at the plate, admittedly in the hands of
Michael Martinez,
but is someone who literally had never been in that situation before in his life.
Baseball's a weird game. JJ, speaking of weird, let's look at the Royals 2012 draft.
Mm-hmm.
So, start off with Kyle Zimmer. Still hope for Kyle Zimmer, you're saying, right? He's down there at number 10?
The thing about Kyle Zimmer is that I do think that I will end up ranking him every year until he's released from the organization. Because as of yet this year, if you want hope as a Royals fan about Kyle Zimmer, thoracic outlet syndrome
might finally explain.
That might be like the where you go, we found it.
Yes.
Because before, you see great stuff at times, and then other times he's like, it doesn't feel right, the ball's not coming out right.
Most of the time you just see him on backfields in surprise.
But... and that could explain it, which could finally be like, we've given you now the keys to do what you've always been able to do.
So this draft hasn't produced a lot up top. But Daniel Stumpf in the ninth round gotten to the big leagues as a Rule 5 guy. I loved Zach Lovorn out of Oxford, Alabama High School in 2012. I wrote that guy up good. Andrew Triggs in the 19th round is a big leaguer. Not for them. I think they might have even released him. Matt Strom.
I mean...
number two on your list, Alec Mills, 22nd round, has been in the big leagues.
Yeah.
So it's just so weird how this draft how some of these drafts for them have gone. So we detailed, they haven't drafted, I don't think there's any other way to say it, they have not drafted efficiently at the top of the first round.
But
since Eric Hosmer. They really haven't.
Right. Now again.
They spent a lot of money. Manaea was a good pick.
I was going to say.
And they traded him.
I was going to say, the thing about this is Cody Reed was a good pick.
Second round, yes.
They have, I would change that a little bit. I do think where they are right now is, there's a lot of it is that they went all in to win and they won.
Because hey, worth it. As you wrote in the overview, absolutely worth it.
But if you took this team, because Brandon Finnegan is a big league starting pitcher also.
Right.
You're also drafted, again.
The draft that you have to hope comes through for the Royals to have, if they don't win in 2017, if they have a bad first half, they trade these guys and you rebuild through some trades.
Because, by the way, if they have
a bad May, you might want
to
just...
I was going to say, if they are sitting there... and it's tough to do because you are then saying, okay, it's going to take some time.
Right.
Long time.
These things take time.
But if you look at this, that would be a much quicker rebuild. If you said Hosmer, Moustakas, Kane, Wade Davis.
Right.
All these guys are available. You could literally rebuild a farm system in
pretty
one
quickly.
Year.
I agree.
I mean, that's, but...
the other way, if they don't do that, if,
then,
say if they hold on to their guys
then
and
then
win.
Qualifying offer.
But then you really need this 2014 draft class to come through, which started with Finnegan, traded, obviously, everything worth it. Foster Griffin, Chase Vello, who's number 7, like a Mike Napoli comp, mm-hmm. if you like him. Scott Blewett, we already mentioned, number 6. Eric Skoglund, or Skoglund, number 4. DJ Burt, North Carolinian, very
like
fast. 43 steals this year, I kind of like him. Even Corey Ray, the other Corey Ray, right-hander out of Texas A&M, had a decent year. Say a little prayer for Brandon Down's career, winding down, former personal cheese ball, not working out. But Ryan O'Hearn, who's number 8 mm-hmm. on your list. So if
Corey Toops, I like. It's number 15th rounder, Corey Toops.
So if they're good in 2017 and they don't rebuild, the hope for their farm system has to come really from this draft class. That 2014 draft class has given them some indications of some hope.
And
that's fair.
And then the other part of this is, and then you're talking about you're sending qualifying offers to a ton of guys, and you're saying, okay, we're going to have a 2018 draft bounty.
Right.
But the thing with the 2018 draft bounty is that that's still going to take, you're talking, you are then talking into the 20s. I mean, the reality of it is that no matter what happens in 17, this is probably a team that is then going to be aiming for kind of the earliest ETAs 2020, 2021.
Mm.
Just because of how you look. I mean, look at what time the process, how long the process took last time.
Right.
That was a 7, 8, 9, 10 process.
Indeed.
And that led to success in end of 13, 14, 15, 16, maybe 17. So started in 07, ends in, starts really to kick in 13. That's 6 years. I don't, again, that's not crazy. But now again, if you're a Royals fan listening to this, that's also logical from the standpoint of, yes, we won a World Series last year. If you're a Royals fan, you're sitting there going, we won a World Series. I'm okay with this.
And you didn't just win a World Series. I mean, you went to back-to-back
World Series. Back-to-back World Series.
And it was exhilarating. Those were exhilarating teams.
It was everything as a fan that you could hope for. And the reality of it is that the other part of that is that I you know, and the Royals fans did come out, I think, pretty well this year. But I know that there has to be, when the rebuilding process hits, there will also be somewhat of a great winnowing, not of fans, because they've built another generation of Royals fans.
Right.
But it is something where the casual fan will check back in years from now.
Right.
Because then it does.
And we'll rewatch their videos of the 2015.
Then it goes back to, the fans, the hardcore who are like, I remember 99 and 2000
right, exactly.
and 2001. I remember when we had guys fall down in the outfield and balls fall.
I remember when Gil Mesh was our hope. You know, was that 2007, 2008 when he got a big contract? So,
you know, I mean, other words, I remember when Jose Lima went from Atlantic League to our ace on a winning team, the only winning team for a long stretch there.
Is there a super deep cut that you just like a guy with the Royals that you like that you can't explain why you like him so much, but you like him?
Well, the guy, it's not even a deep cut, but the two guys who did not make the 10 who I could easily have put in the 10. I did go a little bit more up
a level.
You
like Nicky Lopez, right?
Well, I wouldn't even go him. He's okay. But Khalil Lee, who's a tough guy to rank right now because Khalil Lee was their third-round pick. Now, the other thing you got to remember with this is, with the Royals is, they didn't have a first-round pick this year.
Right.
They had no money.
That was the other part of it. They had the second smallest bonus pool.
And they've been drafting now. They are bearing the, if you go to the World Series 2 years in a row, you don't draft high.
Right.
And you don't have a lot of money to spend with that. But they did not have a first-round pick. But so A.J. Puckett made their top 10, their second-round pick. And then Khalil Lee was their third-round pick and had a great AZL debut. And to be honest, he didn't make this 10 because there's a little bit of, okay, that was really good. It was the AZL. Let's see you do it again.
Yeah.
Just from the standpoint of you're going to still rank prominently.
Right.
But a third-rounder does that. We can't throw away everything that we thought we knew from the drafts yet. He lasted a third round for a reason.
Exactly.
So, and then the other guy who is Sully Matias, who had a very powerful AZL.
I thought you were going to say Mabrus.
This is Royals. I could go on for another 4 hours if we wanted. But Sully Matias, who has prototypical right field tools.
He's the Esteban Florial of the Royals organization.
Doesn't run as well.
Okay.
But he plays center right now, but really he's going to be a right fielder as he fills out and all that. But he showed mammoth power,
yes.
And he also showed some strikeouts.
Yes.
But he also went to the AZL in his first professional season.
Always good when you skip over the
when you're
the
good
league,
enough to
DR.
Do that.
Yep.
So there's a lot to like there. again, I do think that there's some players. They spent some money. They've done a really good job in Latin America year after year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so...
Those are my guys. I like Nicky Lopez, the way you described him. I know he didn't stand out to me when I saw him in the Appy League. By this, I knew that he was the... I was like, oh, Nicky Lopez, kid from Creighton. He was hitting like 3-hole for them. And he really dominated that league.
It's not inconceivable that when we look at the college shortstops from the 2016 class, which did not... There was no Bregman. There was no Swanson. There was no Trey Turner. There was none of those guys.
No Kevin Newman. No Kyle Holder, even.
There may be a Kyle Holder in this.
I don't know about a 7 defender.
But there may be a 6 defender hit. You know, okay. Maybe. Sure. But when you look at it all said and done, in a class where the college shortstops, the draft class of college shortstops, was very eye of the beholder.
The college shortstop class took a deep breath and said, let's gather our steam after losing.
And we knew that a year, we kept saying this is nothing against Ryan Howard, yes. But Missouri's Ryan Howard.
Right.
When we're watching USA Baseball and we're like...
But this is not a good sign.
That Ryan Howard, who was the 7th best shortstop in the SEC as a draft-eligible sophomore...
Was the college national team shortstop
the next, you know, the following summer. But is a chance that Nicky Lopez could be at near the top of that group. He's a good athlete. He has excellent feel. You could say that he showed no power in college, but he was played at Creighton.
Exactly.
I mean, you could have 60 power, and it's like, he had 2 home runs.
That's right. Like Mike Gerber hit 11 home runs there. I'm pretty sure that's the highest for any Creighton player. And he did, I think 10 were on the road. The late, great Steve Pivovar. I think I found that story this year editing Mike Gerber. But, I mean, like, you know, the thing is for Lopez is he's 22, so I would assume they'd move him pretty quickly next year. A little surprised that he was at Burlington. And then Mabers Valoria is interesting because the guy really, really hit. But it would be nice to look at this a year from now and see some of these players have a little bit more performance in the minor leagues. Because basically all your guys who are top guys who were high draft picks did not perform for the Royals.
The high draft picks, you would say, I mean, like Hunter Dozier still high draft pick and he did perform.
He performed.
But no, really. Scoglin was a late round, you know, it was a...
Third rounder.
And so, you know, and he performed. But it is the late rounders like Strom, you know, Puckett, the second rounder who just arrived. Chase Flo was a supplement first round, and he performed and we got hurt.
Yeah. But I do like A.J. Puckett. I mean, obviously I did this column on him in the spring. I'm an A.J. Puckett fan. But at the same time, he's a right-handed pitcher with a fringy breaking ball right now. And, yeah, how much fastball is he really going to have? He's a command-oriented starter. Granted, at the college level, it was exquisite command, but is he going to have that fine of command as a pro?
Really, what, again, it comes back to is when you talk about the Royals' draft, you know, I may think that they're, again, the Christian Colon pick is one that looks awful. I mean, just awful in hindsight because he was 4th overall. But it really comes back to these high school pitchers. Ken Blewett, you know, they don't need all 4 of them. They're not going to get all 4 of them. You knew that when you drafted them.
Right.
Can you get one really good one and one okay one out of it? And if you do that, it's all... And I still think they have a shot at that. I would say Scott Blewett, this reason he's number 6, is that you are talking about a New York kid, so cold weather
guy.
Give
him some time, yep.
And he's making progress. He's basically had a good half season each of the last 2 years and a bad half season. This year, the good half season was the second half.
Right.
Okay, and then whether it's... You know, Watson or Ask Russell, maybe it's Griffin.
Foster Griffin.
But one of those other guys becomes a back-end starter
or a useful reliever.
Then you're okay. You know, but again, you're not going to get all 4 of them.
Right.
But you were never going to get all 4 of them.
That's how it's worked. So it is amazing how we end up talking about Royals pitching development again. But they can't hear me because when they have their pennant ring and World Series ring in their ears,
I mean, they can, and the thing about it is
they can tell me to stick it.
And they also can now say, when you say, can you develop starting pitching? They can say, Yordano Ventura
and
Danny Duffy.
Say hello.
And they also can say, and by the way, Cody Reed, Sean Manaea, Brandon Finnegan. Again, they traded away 3 guys who you could potentially pencil into their 2017 rotation.
Correct.
Like, that would be a
thing. 3 left-handers.
They could put together, they literally could have put together, without the trades, they could have had 4 lefties and Ventura that are a 5-man homegrown rotation where you say, this is a good rotation.
Yeah, that's a rotation that could compete. No, you're right. So
and again, Cody Reed to me is one trades. Of their... Cody Reed is... I know he had a bad... I got to write him up for the Reds.
Right.
He's still eligible. But I know he had a bad MLB debut. Bad MLB debut. But the stuff is really good. And he really developed.
That was a great pick.
So, you know...
Mississippi Junior Colleges in 2013 was where it was at. Cody Reed and Tim Anderson. I mean, and we liked writing about those guys that year. So, great stuff, JJ. Hope you guys enjoy it. We'll be back with another... So, we'll spin the wheel and see which AL Central team we do tomorrow as we try to do finish a magazine before Thanksgiving. But enjoy this one on your drive, your flight, wherever you're going for the holiday. If we don't talk to you tomorrow, we'll try to come back with another podcast on Tuesday.
We're hoping to talk to you tomorrow.
All right, for JJ, I'm John. We'll see you in the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.